The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardin. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Happy Canada Day weekend, my friends. Indeed, it's a beauty. And we all deserve a little time off. Hey, up north, out in the boat. Price of the pumps certainly being spoken about, I guess, throughout cottage country in the city. No reprieve there. Really, anywhere you go, you're seeing higher price. And when I say anywhere, go to Europe, you'll add another buck and a half or 2 bucks a gallon anyways onto some crude oil. So, the world's going green. But we keep burning crude. 100 million barrels of it we burn each and every day, my friends. Yep. Well, it's a bull market. And what can I say? A little pullback in the space. But it's a real pleasure. We're getting some boots on the ground here, trying to find out what is happening in the energy space. Delighted to introduce Mike Bucher. He's president of PHX Energy Services, trading on the Toronto Stock Market, Stock Exchange, PHX Energy. PHX is a symbol. Mike, you have been with the company for, you said, north of 20 years, and off air I kibitz with you and said, also you saw the stock at $18. Currently your stock is trading just under $5. So you've seen good days in the oil patch. You've seen bad days in the oil patch. How would you describe today in the oil patch?
Well, thanks for having me. I think we are in a situation in our business. And I can expand on a couple of reasons why, but I think we're in a situation where it's probably as rosy of an outlook as we can remember. The business itself, we are Calgary-based, TSX-listed, but we do generate about 80% of our revenue in the U.S. And the Canadian market has gone through lots of ups and downs. Obviously, the U.S. market the same, but the U.S. market is the best directional drilling market, which is what we specialize in. In the world. And if you were to look at the U.S., there's really the prime area that you want to be is in West Texas in the Permian Basin. And that's where we shine. So 80% of the corporate revenue comes out of the U.S. About 85% of U.S. revenue is focused on the Permian Basin. The rig count there continues to tick up. As a company, we sort of live and die on the rig count. There's about 330 or 340 rigs working in that basin. We continue to capture market share away from some large multinational service companies. So things are good right now, to answer your question.
You know, the technology that is applied to the oil patch is remarkable, and it has gone through tectonic changes, I would say, in the last 15 to 20 years. You obviously, in the energy services space, you drill holes up and down, left and right. You probably do circles with your drill bits today, no pun intended. But talk to us about the change in technology and what that's meant for the energy patch and what it means on a go-forward basis.
So from the high level of drilling-wise, if you think about the amount of time it takes to drill a well, when I started in this business in the early 90s, A typical well, and this is all basin dependent, where it's location dependent, but a typical well, and I'll talk about West Texas, would be somewhere in the range of, say, 40 to 50 days. If you look at a well in Canada, and say the Montney or the Duvernay or the Deep Basin, or you pick your area, but those wells might have taken 30 to 40 days. Well, today, those wells that were taking between 30 and 50 days are now taking 12 to 18 days to drill. And what's happened is technology on the drilling rig has really advanced. And there's all sorts of things that have happened on the drilling rig itself. So if you think about the equipment that it takes to drill a well, you need a rig. We are not in the rig business. We provide a bundle of equipment and personnel just to steer the well. So when people hear the term directional drilling, they often think, well, you must have drilling rigs, but that's not the case. So our technology, it's about 30 to 40 meters worth of equipment that we screw onto the end of the drill string. The drill string is provided by the rig contracting company. But the rig itself, the capabilities of rigs have gotten much better. You can pump more fluid at a faster rate, and you can lift more weight with a rig today than ever before. So when that transition happened in sort of the mid-2000, I would say from about 2008 to 2012, a big transition happened with drill rig technology. We, as the directional drilling provider, took that opportunity to advance our downhole technology. So the we have devices, one's called a drilling motor, which is essentially a pump, and another piece of equipment called a measurement well drilling tool, which is essentially a string of electronics that tells us where we are. We reinvented our version of those pieces of equipment, make them bigger, stronger, and working in conjunction with a bigger, stronger drilling rig, we've been able to help the operator, our customer, which would be the big oil and gas companies that everybody would be familiar with, I think, to drill wells faster. So technology-wise, it's the ability to cut days off of wells, drill wells faster and more efficiently. And that's where we found our niche, particularly in sort of the western portion of the basin in Canada and the Permian Basin in the U.S.
If you're just tuning into the show, it is Hi-Fi Radio, 640 in Toronto, each and every Saturday night. Mike Bucher, president of PHX Energy Services, has joined us. It's an energy services company focusing on part of the drilling process. You know, Mike, I continue to be amazed. You know, I understand drills. I took shop in school. I very much enjoyed shop and both a metal shop and wood shop. So I've drilled holes both through metal and wood, not so much through the ground and rock. But going up and down, I get. Going left, horizontal drilling, that's very fascinating. How long has your industry been drilling horizontally? How deep do you go to go horizontal? And how do you actually turn the corner? I'm curious.
Great question. Yeah, and that's I think a lot of people miss that that part of what we do. So if you think about, let's go back 30 years in the drilling business, almost every well was drilled vertically. So essentially what you do is you put a drill bit on the end of some pipe and you rotate that pipe. That's the function of the drilling rig. It rotates the pipe and that bit interacts with the rock and eventually you grind your way down and you might intersect a formation that's say 2,000 to 3,000 meters deep in the earth. And down in that formation is porous rock, and that rock has oil or natural gas in it, and then you produce it. Now, that layer of rock might be, say, 50 meters or 20 meters, depending on the area, thick. So what you've got is if you drill all the way through that vertically, you get, say, 20 meters of production. They call it pay zone. Now, horizontally, what we do is we have a device called a drilling motor, and this motor has a slight bend in the bottom of it. Think of it as a cylindrical tube. It's roughly 30 feet long. You pump fluid through that motor. It produces torque. The bit is screwed onto the end of the motor. And whatever direction you orient that bend, a very slight bend in the bottom of the motor, that's the direction the bit's going to drill. So if you want to drill a horizontal well, you orient the bend in the motor in a particular direction. You pump fluid through it. The drill string will actually bend around a corner. Now, even though it's going from vertical to horizontal, it's doing that in roughly 150 to 200 meters of depth. So it's not like it's a very tight corner. So you think about it's about 150 meters deep, and it takes about 150 meters of horizontal displacement to go from vertical to horizontal. And so now you've got this curve built. Now your bit is in the formation. And the trick then is to drill as far as you can in that pay zone to expose the well to as much pay as possible. So instead of, at the end of the day, if you've got a 1,000-meter leg or a horizontal leg on your well, you've got a 1,000 meters of productive pay zone as opposed to, say, 20 meters if you just drilled through it vertically. So when you hear things like back when I started, a good well, a vertical well, might produce, say, 50 barrels of oil a day, or a really good one might be 100. Today, a good well would produce somewhere between 500 and 1,500 barrels a day. And that's because of the exposure to the pay zone that the horizontal drilling actually does. So our customers are, without question, we are seeing what we would call capital discipline in our business. So, and when I look back at other boom bust cycles in the oil and gas industry, a situation that we're in today where the price of the commodity has gone way up, we would typically see a really substantial increase in the rig count in North America. So the rig count is slowly ticking up in both Canada and the U.S. So, you know, in previous up cycles, we'd see 10 or 20 or 30 rigs a week being added to the rig count. Today, we're seeing between 5 and 10 in North America. And that's a much more disciplined approach. It's much, much more sustainable. So our view is we've probably got all the makings for a longer up cycle here than what we would have seen in previous upturns.
And based on that information, Mike, would you expect it not only to be longer, I guess, but just less volatile? Because, you know, energy and energy services over the years have been historically a volatile, a very treacherous space, I'm going to say, for investors. Obviously, you got to get the cycle right. Do you expect to see this cycle not only extended, but maybe elongated based on what you're seeing with capital expenditure?
We certainly feel that way. You know, as a company, we feel like we've got a competitive advantage, and that's been proven by our ability to steal market share from the biggest service companies out there. The slow, steady increase in the rig count, PHX's ability to capture market share, you know, geopolitical stresses that we're all familiar with is probably leading to a prolonged upcycle for commodity prices, which therefore leads to our customers adding rigs slowly as opposed to cutting rigs quickly. And so, our view is the stars are lining up for what would hopefully be a extended up period for the industry.
Yeah, Mike, as Jack and I have been saying for some time, the ESG theme has certainly kept money out of the oil patch. That pent-up demand, of course, at some point is going to make your phone ring. And, well, obviously you're telling us you're beginning to see it now. We're going to take a quick break, get right back with Mike Bucher. He's the president of PHX Energy Services, Calgary-based company, trading on the TSX under PHX. Stock also pays a 6% dividend. I'm going to talk about the safety of that income as we get back to them right after the break. Stay tuned.
Let's take a break. Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Come and listen to a story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
It was only that easy to find crude these days. Hey, Mike, back in the good old days, you take out a gun, you shoot at a possum, and if you miss, you might hit some crude, and you hit payload. No. Now they have to call guys like you into drill these very deep wells. You mentioned in the last break, 3,000 meters at times you're drilling. That's 3 kilometers down, and then you hang a right and go across the field, to be more efficient at extracting crude. Your stock pays a dividend. Company's stock yielding 6%. What is your dividend policy, and what's the stability of your dividend policy, Mike?
So we've managed through probably a little bit of good planning and good luck to get into a situation where we have no debt or very low debt. We have an opportunity to grow with some CapEx. So we're big believers in rewarding shareholders. So we've been buying back our own shares since 2017, and we've purchased about 17% of the outstanding shares. The ability to grow with CapEx, we've got a fairly aggressive CapEx program this year. We're trying to take advantage of this upswing. And then, of course, the dividend. So we were a dividend-paying corp until about 2015. We went through a pretty severe downturn for a few years. We reinstated our dividend at the end of 2020 at 2.5 cents per share per quarter. We've since raised that dividend twice. So we're currently at 7.5 cents per share per quarter. Our view is we want to get money back in the hands of our shareholders. And in terms of a policy, I think our top priority right now is CapEx. Number two would be dividend. But, you know, we're very focused on making sure that we're getting money back into the hands of shareholders through that dividend. And we'll continue that as long as industry conditions allow that.
When you use the word CapEx, friends at home, Mike is referring to capital expenditures. I assume you're going to buy yourself some more drill bits.
Yeah, so we more equipment. So we call them kits. It's a bundle of equipment that we send out to a drilling rig in order to steer the well from vertical to horizontal. We're in the midst of adding somewhere in the range of 50 additional kits this year. Our view is we're going to see the rig count continue to tick up. We don't think the rig count is going to accelerate, and it'll probably slow down once we get to, say, close to 1,000 rigs in the North American market. And we're basing that on the fact that there is a tremendous amount of capital discipline from our customers, and the industry probably only needs something around 1,000 rigs to actually maintain or slightly grow the production here. And what I'm talking about is North America, U.S. and Canada combined.
You can really sense the trepidation, even in your own industry, about really moving forward too aggressively at looking for more crude. And again, if you don't find enough crude in what's a very tight supply-demand market, none of it spells well for the consumer at home amidst, you know, $120 crude prices. You got to think crude is going to go up. And I want you to answer that question, your call for crude, if you may. This might maybe step out of your comfort zone a little bit. You obviously have a very valid opinion. But I also wanted to get your thought, going back 2 years ago, what went through your mind when energy went negative a barrel? Yes, they would pay you to take barrels of crude off of to tankers.
Well, we've got a bit of a unique situation here at PHX where our management, our executive team has been together a really long time, in excess of 20 to 25 years. So we've seen lots of ups and downs. The downturn in the fall of 20 was unprecedented, obviously seeing negative crude prices, but that, of course, was short-lived. So our strategy is just hang on. Things are going to get better, and certainly that was the case. It's probably accelerated a little faster than we even anticipated. But our view on crude prices is I probably don't think 120 is sustainable. You'll continue to see the rig count tick upwards in North America and other markets as well, the Middle East. $110 a barrel today might be $90 a barrel later this year. We'll see. But even at those numbers, that's very attractive economics for our customers. So our view is that we'll continue to see some pretty positive signs in our industry in the foreseeable future. Price of natural gas as well is quite strong.
And speaking of natural gas, Mike, let's talk about the geopolitics. So obviously, Ukraine and Russia, I'm going to say, was not only is one of the catalysts that caused oil to move higher. What's your views on energy supply going forward? Obviously, Russia's a big player in the market. You have unfriendly jurisdictions like Iran and Saudi Arabia. You're working in a friendly jurisdiction, obviously, that being the U.S., up here in Canada as well. What's your view on the landscape going forward with geopolitics and how we source our energy?
It is frustrating, I think, is probably a light term for us to sit where we sit, to think that the world needs more of what we can do. And there's been lots of political pressure to get out of our business. But the truth is, the transition is probably going to take longer than a lot of people would probably like, but there is a transition underway. But for now, into the foreseeable future, we have to produce energy to keep the world going. We have the ability to do that here in North America, and we should do that. That's our view. Let us do what we do, because the whole industry runs very efficiently. If we have to source crude from other parts of the world, well, that's okay. We'll do that. But certainly there's an opportunity to have all of the oil and natural gas we need produced in North America if we were just allowed to do it.
I think that's underappreciated, the fact that, to maintain the standard of living that we have here in North America, and people around the world want to have the same, you need energy, you need oil supplies, and getting it from Canada and the U.S., like I said, friendly jurisdictions is very important. Based on that, we've talked about this, the ESG, so environmental, social, and governance movement out there. That's one of the reasons why we're I guess, restricting supply, or we have been over the last, kind of say 10 years. What's your view on the space, and how do you deal with those types of investors, Mike?
So we launched our first ESG report just over a year ago. It was very positively received. We just released our second one earlier this year. We as a company, we're very focused on ESG concerns, and we as an industry in North America, there's no other region in the world that oil and gas industry in the world that is as focused on ESG concerns as the North American market. That's just a fact. So we've got all the reasons to produce resources responsibly here, and that happens. And we'll continue to focus on ESG items as they come along. Our customers are demanding that we follow tight ESG rules and policies, and we're quite happy to do that.
And when you follow the policies, Mike, getting back to the institutional, I guess, landscape, is it well received by those types of endowment funds, institutions, large investors? Because a lot of that space is sort of pushing away some of the oil and gas and trying to obviously go green, which is, as you said, the transition is upon us, but it's maybe a little bit premature to completely exit the space, especially from an investment point of view, when you have such strong fundamentals, cash flow, dividends, all the fundamental things that investors look for.
Yeah, and I think what's happened is there was a very big push a couple of years ago. My gut feeling is that money managers have probably, I don't know if softened their view a little bit is the right word, but I think once they see what's happening in our industry and how responsible the industry is, and quite frankly, how profitable the industry can be. This is an industry that is focused on shareholder returns more so today than it ever was. That, to me, bodes well for future investment.
My friends, we're going to take a quick break here and say thank you to Mike Bucher, president of PHX Energy Services, trading on the Toronto Stock Exchange. It's an oil drilling company, and they do very, very fine work. Mike, thank you again for your insight. I wish you great success, and may you see your $18 share price in the foreseeable future. I'm going to speak with Yuri Link, one of our infrastructure analysts at Canaccord, get his take on the construction industry coming out of the break. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
My friends, Happy Canada Day. Hope you have an amazing weekend. Glorious time of the year for us Canadians. And, well, hey, why not extend the weekend into Monday? U.S. markets closed. Canadian markets will be very, very quiet. And take the extra day off. Enjoy yourself. Why not? Indeed. Yuri Link, one of our managing directors, is an analyst with Canaccord. He covers the capital goods sector, Finning and Tormont, and engineering firms like Stantec and WSP Global. He understands big equipment and long cycle activities, shall I say. Yes, you don't build roads and bridges in a day. It takes a long time to plan and execute. Yuri, please speak to your sector. Again, a very, what I was taught, called a long cycle sector, government contracts, long infrastructure projects. This was such a theme when I actually got into the industry. Infrastructure rebuild, a global phenomenon. China creating cities like never before. And that was from 2000 to 2010. And then it just seemed to hang in there, you know, perform sort of along with the economy, but it wasn't the highlight. Again, you're coming out of pandemic, so much government interest in spending money to reinvigorate the economy. Did you see any of that spill over into your space? And what is the current mood right now in the industrials?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Wolf, and thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be here. I agree. It was a big theme, and these stocks did really well for the first 10 years of the 2000s. And then, the crisis hit, government budgets got hit, commodity prices, which also play a role in demand for some of these companies, some more than others. So those were in a long funk. But as we sit here today, we're quite bullish on the outlook for this sector in general. And there's two reasons why. We finally, after years and years and years of talk about it, they finally passed an infrastructure package in the United States. Last November, Biden passed the $1 trillion Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And that's in law, and we're starting to see some of that money actually trickle in already into some end markets, particularly water. But this is a key one, because it's going to provide visibility for states and local governments, the funding visibility that they need to undertake long-term big projects that just wasn't there before when they were on an annual funding mechanism. And we're seeing this start to translate into the backlogs and the organic growth profile of a lot of the engineering firms. They've recovered from the pandemic. Organic growth is ticking up, and we pay a lot of attention to that KPI, because it's the best indicator of utilization of their employees. And if you can get that utilization up, everybody's billing hours, it does wonders for your margins. So we're bullish on Stantec and WSP in that regard. The other thing that I would say is a nice tailwind here is commodity prices. I understand that they've come off, but the price of copper and oil, and also the EV metals are also very high, and that's spurring investment. And so you're going to need engineering firms to do your environmental assessments, get your social license, the Finnings and the Tormonts can also supply a lot of equipment into that. So the last thought on this, and I'll turn it back over to you, I don't want to go on too long, but it's just that these stocks are all down. These stocks are all down year to date. They had a great year last year, and they've all underperformed by a wide margin this year, despite putting up good numbers and very constructive guidance for the near term and long term. So we're telling our institutional clients to go out and buy this weakness because we think these stocks are well positioned.
Well, again, there always is another cycle. And, you have to say our very own technician, Javid, has done a lot of work around the 4-year cycle. And he's been calling for a four-year cycle reset, which we are right in the middle of. And that's basically when the bull market ends, you go into a bear market. And once the bear market ends, you set the deck for the next cycle. And I think that's what you're basically advising your clients. Fill your boots, get set for the next cycle when it comes to the long cycle industrial names. But let's now speak to your clients. And you mentioned the word water. Let's start in that industry. Jack and I own a stock called Xylem. It's one of the world's largest water companies. They get involved in putting in municipal systems. They get involved in management and monitoring and upgrading systems internationally. And Jack and I believe it's a 10-year, 20-year play. What can you share with the audience about the water industry and why it's so, I think, critical and also an opportunity for long-term investors?
Yeah, so for your Xylem, I would say the one that I cover that's a pure play on water is H2O Innovation out of Quebec City. Pure play water, they're on the filtration, operations and maintenance, and then they also sell a lot of consumables into that space. And their organic growth has really been ticking up quite a bit. And there's a bunch of long cycle secular demand drivers, the first being that, the existing infrastructure is old and needs to be upgraded. And then, population growth and all this housing activity requires new infrastructure builds. And then just the safety aspect, there's been quite a few, incidents like in Walkerton where people are drinking, they don't have access to clean water. And that's a huge problem that needs to be addressed. So I agree with you. I think this is a 10-year plus opportunity.
I'm surprised with all the media attention Walkerton received so long ago that it still doesn't have clean water. The show is Hi-Fi Radio each and every Saturday. I am Wolfgang Klein, portfolio manager, along with my partner, Jack Hartle, portfolio manager. Delighted to spend some time this evening with Yuri Link. He's one of our analysts. He's been covering the industrial engineering space since I've known him. So very, very well entrenched in a very, very critical, I think, industry here at home. We're going to take a quick break and get right back with Yuri Link, Hi-Fi Radio. Stay tuned, 640 Toronto.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good.
I feel okay. Bublé. Thank you for that. Michael Bublé helping us teed up Canada Day weekend. Going to keep the CanCon spinning as long as I can. Well, that wasn't my last song for the evening, I must say. Sadly so. Show's about money. We like to squeeze in some fidelity. It just makes everything, feel so much better. When you're feeling down and if you're looking at your account and saying, oh, it's been a tough year, and it has been a challenging year for all of us. The opportunities are in front of us for investors, not traders, not market timers, but for investors. Things are on sale. If you're feeling really down, play some happy music. It's Canada Day weekend. Enjoy yourself. This too shall pass. There will be clear skies in the future. Mark my words. Do we get through the pandemic? Okay, we're going to handle rising interest rates as well and inflation. Yuri, give us your opinion on pricing power or inflationary pressures in your space. Again, to your industry, your clients, the people that you analyze, obviously labor intensive in many parts of it. Labor markets are very, very tight. Inflation is rampant. What type of inflation and pricing power and pass along abilities do your clients have in the industrial space, Yuri?
Well, it obviously varies by company, but you know, the ones that we've talked about, and they're my highest conviction ideas right now, the WSPs and Stantec and Finnings and Tormonts. Part of the reason is that they're not only they don't only have pricing power, they're very well positioned here. So Finning and Tormont, for example, they're the authorized Caterpillar dealers in their respective territories. And to translate that, if you've got a project and you need a piece of equipment, or you've got a piece of equipment and it needs a filter or a part or whatever to run, you need to get that job done, and you're going to pay up. And the dealers and Caterpillar itself have been pushing through double-digit price increases year to date. We've written about that, and by and large, their clients are eating these price increases. They don't have a choice. And they've actually had really good margins. Both Finning and Tormont had very good margins the last two quarters. So I would argue that they wouldn't tell you that, but they're probably benefiting a little bit from the tightness in the market for equipment. As for the engineers, I mean, they turn their backlogs, Wolf, really quickly. They are on multi-year projects, but they bill every 2 weeks at every milestone, and a lot of these agreements are cost reimbursable. So it's like an open book to your customer. You know, I have to pay my staff, 5-10% more. That has to get passed on. So again, both WSP and Stantec, you've seen their margins rising year on year through the first quarter of this year. So another reason why we like these stocks.
Jack, you got a couple questions there for Yuri?
Yeah, sure. And again, thanks, Yuri, for joining us. With it being Canada today, I figured we'd talk about lumber, pressure-treated lumber. You're talking about, equipment services sort of being inelastic. If you have a machine, you got to make sure you get it fixed. But my deck's kind of falling apart in my backyard, and so is my fence. But I've been delaying because of pressure-treated prices. You cover, it's distribution hardware. Domain Building Materials, the former Canwell. Can you maybe talk about that? What your expectation is for pressure treat, and views on prices coming down?
Yeah, I mean, the old adage, the best cure for high prices is high prices. So it's exactly what you're talking about. I mean, people are going to defer, or some of this composite stuff. At these levels is just as expensive. It was usually at a very, very big premium, this composite material for your deck, which is a great product, and lasts, you don't have to sand it and all that. And I think that's a big, big competitor, to wood that might, you might see more switching in a way from wood, which will drive the price down. So we see, lumber's probably not going anywhere, and might remain under pressure here in the medium term, because I think renovation activity might slow down, building housing starts might slow down a little bit here, or maybe even contract given the rate environment. So I would expect if you stay on the sidelines, you might save yourself some money when you finally pull the trigger on the reno.
Right. And are you seeing inventory build with some of these? Like I said, I mentioned Domain Building, but them and other, commodity suppliers?
They work on a consignment inventory, so it's still their customers' inventory. They don't really hold the inventory for very long, so I wouldn't see it. Just their business model doesn't allow any kind of big inventory build.
Right. And just with the inflation and higher interest rates that we're dealing with, you mentioned Tormont, you mentioned Finning potentially benefiting. What are some other names that you really like in your space in a higher inflation, higher interest rate environment?
Well, I mean, I would just continue with that theme of you know, where I'm seeing growth, and you know, another name that I hadn't mentioned this morning, if you go a little more down market cap, but still over $1 billion, would be the Badger Daylighting. Now it's called Badger Infrastructure Services. We upgraded this one late last year, and we like this one. The macro's turning. They've repositioned their fleet in growth areas, and they're now 80% infrastructure. So most of that is utilities, and then infrastructure. They're only 20% oil and gas, but if oil and gas CapEx grows, which it is supposed to this year, they can easily reposition some trucks back into that market and take advantage of an upswing there. So the stock is closer to a 52-week low than high, and the valuation that we noted in the piece we put out this morning is actually pretty attractive. So that's one that we really like here as well.
Yuri Link, Managing Director, Engineering and Construction Sector. Global view on things. Fantastic insight. I can't thank you enough for spending time with us this Canada Day weekend. You enjoy the rest of it, my good friend. Jack, as always, delight working with you. Did a great job teaming up the guest, producer of the show. Host the show, Mwalsi, Wolfgang Klein. Please, any questions for Jack or I, go to our website, wolfgangklein.com. We're getting through the crisis. We're holding hands. And, well, on a relative basis, we're doing just fine. You can take a look at our performance. I think you'll be quite impressed against wolfgangklein.com. Have a great weekend. Speak with you next Saturday. Same bat time, same bat channel, 640 Toronto.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email Wolf and Jack at wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.